from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
As the Catholics of Washington, D.C. await the appointment of a new archbishop for the nation's capital, the retired archbishops of Washington, former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick and Cardinal Donald Wuerl, both remain in the headlines. What is the latest involving both, and what has happened to Cardinal Wuerl's once great legacy? This week on Register Radio, we talk to Register Senior Editor Joan Frawley Desmond and CNA's D.C. Editor Ed Condon. Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register Senior Editor and co-host for Register Radio. My co-host, Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, is away on maternity leave. Well, this last week, Cardinal Donald Wuerl issued a series of letters to his priests trying, again, to explain what he knew and when about the scandal surrounding his predecessor, former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. The letters seem to have done little to ease the controversy and anger of many Catholics. The new denials have, in fact, sparked new questions. I'm joined by Joan Frawley Desmond, Register Senior Editor, who recently published a blog post with the remarkable title, listen to this, Why Did Cardinal Wuerl Lie About McCarrick? Here's what you need to know. Joan, welcome back to Register Radio.
Hi, Matthew. Good to talk to you.
Well, the title of your blog post, I think, in many ways says it all. A lot of people are asking, did Cardinal Wuerl actually lie about his knowledge regarding former Cardinal McCarrick, now Archbishop McCarrick, who, for those who may not be familiar with his case, we are awaiting right now a verdict from the Holy See as to his own behavior, and the abuse of minors, as well as sexual scandals involving adults. In your opinion, did Cardinal Wuerl lie about what he knew?
You know, it's really hard to make that judgment. And when I was doing the post, I kept thinking, should I say misrepresent or what's the right word? And, well, I think I was inspired by the Washington Post, which basically said in an editorial that he had lied. I mean, I think it's a challenging time. Cardinal Wuerl has followed somebody who appeared when he arrived to be a success story, and everything flipped at some point. And we really have two separate issues, one about his legacy dealing with abusive priests and minors, and the other one about what he knew about McCarrick and when he knew it. And it's that second one that he's had a hard time dealing with. And many people are confused about what he has actually said on the subject, which seems to have shifted, he says, because he either was misunderstood or because more recently, he said he forgot about McCarrick. The strange thing, that he forgot about what he knew about McCarrick. Now, that may sound awkward in itself, Matthew, but basically what we now know is that he signed off on a memorandum saying he had heard he knew about a settlement or at least allegations involving a former seminarian involving McCarrick, and he actually went to the trouble of going to the nuncio in 2004 after receiving this information and reporting it. So the question is, well, if he did that, why would he now say he didn't know about it or he hadn't heard that or these were only rumors that had never been confirmed?
Well, you hit on something that's important here, and that is that here was somebody with a pretty impressive record over the decades. When he was in Pittsburgh, I think it was some 47 cases that he properly handled. He, of course, was mentioned in the Pennsylvania grand jury report as having mishandled one or two cases, something that he's defended rather vigorously and tried to refute rather vigorously. But here he seems to have been making just a series of, to put it in public relations terms, a series of terrible missteps in the media. And your piece on asking the question, did he lie, you offer four possible explanations for what you describe as his puzzling and shocking behavior. What were those?
Well, there are a couple of different ones. One is, I mean, I want to say that some of this is pure speculation. To be clear, I don't have the answers. I don't know why he did. And maybe we'll learn something different once all these investigations are behind us. But here are some of the possible explanations that I put out there. One is just that he may have thought this evidence that he knew about McCarrick. As I said, he knew about it because he had received information on allegations involving a previous seminarian priest who had been put in a difficult position with McCarrick. So he knew about this, and this document was in the files in the Diocese of Pittsburgh. That's interesting, Matthew, because he could have actually thought this document may never come to light. Why? Mm-hmm. Because the investigation that is now being initiated involves the four dioceses where McCarrick actually served. That's New York, then Metuchen, New Jersey, then Newark, New Jersey, and finally Washington, D.C. McCarrick never served in Pittsburgh. This is a strange case involving this one allegation because the same victim has alleged abuse involving two separate people, one McCarrick and one a Pittsburgh priest. That's how Wuerl was pulled into this as the Bishop of Pittsburgh. It's quite possible this would never have come out if the alleged victim hadn't asked recently to look at his files. And when he looked at the files of this his accused abuser, he saw this document with Wuerl's initials, confirming that he had known about this and had gone to the nuncio. So this was almost a fluke, you might say. I think that's mm-hmm. the most interesting bit of information, is how unlikely it was for something like this to surface.
Yeah, and you also make the rather disturbing question of that he had more to hide. And that's the one I think that a lot of people are most concerned about.
Yeah, I think the issue of having more to hide is tricky, because we don't know if he has more to hide or he doesn't.
Exactly.
That's conjecture, but it's possible. To me, the one that I think is more poignant in a sense, and I was reading a column by Stephen White in the Catholic Thing today, and he brought up the fact that he and me, we both at times feel sympathetic to Wuerl because we feel like he tried to do something. And now he's been whipsawed by events he probably never thought would happen, right? So we're not justifying it, but just saying this is the tragedy of leadership. And Wuerl may have thought that he had a credible record, but he also may have basically decided that, you know, it was too late to straighten things out. He couldn't straighten it out, and he had to stick with his script. The script was, he didn't know about that, and he couldn't change that. It is strange, Matthew, because he could have said something different. He had a long time. People estimate that he had heard that McCarrick was being investigated, you know, the previous summer. So he had, you know, almost a year before the credible allegations against McCarrick were confirmed. He had time to sort this out. So it's even more puzzling that he would now say that he, quote, forgot, when he would have had plenty of time to research this and know exactly what he did or didn't know. So, yes, it's possible that he really did forget. It just seems, you know, it sort of defies belief. Another suggestion I had is that he thought his record was credible. This was another time and place, and basically abuse of seminarians in adult sexual situations were seen by some as not terribly important, while the Dallas Charter had defined the issue of abuse involving minors as a major offense as well as a criminal action, and so that zero tolerance system applied in those cases, and possibly in the minds of some, not involving adults.
Yeah. So to be determined in the coming weeks and months, I expect, but it's also anticipated that there will soon be a new Archbishop of Washington installed. For those, though, who have been really struggling, especially Catholics, with trying to deal with the sex abuse crisis, you also had what I thought was a very helpful in-person, an interview with a psychiatrist, Aaron Cariotti, who the director of the Medical Ethics Program for the School of Medicine at the University of California. And the piece on ncregister.com is How to Operationalize Your New Year's Resolutions, but especially how to respond constructively to the sex abuse crisis. And it does occur to me that given where we are throughout 2018 and now into 2019, this is a rather timely kind of a piece to put out.
I think it really is. And I think what Aaron Cariotti is trying to tell us is we are all part of the body of Christ. So, yes, an individual perpetrator is responsible for his or her actions. But in the larger body of Christ, we are all responsible for each other. We can all do penance. We can all look to our own lives and look to things that we could have done differently. He recommends a couple of things with the new year upon us. I think they're really great ideas, and they're things that I'm putting, so to speak, operationalizing in my own life. One is doing a general confession, taking the time to really go through your life and look at the important things. So for those who don't know, a general confession often involves actually scheduling the time so that, you know, you can not keep too many people waiting in line for confession, but have that time with the confessor to go over things in more detail and really share your life and get his get the confessor's thoughts about it and what you can do in the future. So I thought that was one of the best ideas, and then to go beyond that, to be missionaries, to help others in our families, in our circle of friends, to return to the church or to deepen their faith. I think we're all demoralized in lots of ways, and the question is, you know, what are we going to do now about it? We live in a culture where people spend a lot of time unleashing their rage and frustration with unfolding events, whether they're in politics or in the church. But, you know, it's easy to deflect and set aside things that we can do to make it better. And he really feels that this is, if we really do this, if every Catholic, every active Catholic takes the time to go deeper, to pray, to receive the sacraments, to have this general confession, that this will in itself help be an engine for renewal of the church.
Yeah, you make that important point about renewal, but also giving people a sense of hope. And it's mm-hmm. valuable, I think, for the average Catholic. As you write, it's easy for us to get angry and frustrated with our leaders as we wait for them to fix the crisis and apologize for what they did. But that vital point that we forget, we're also part of the body of Christ. Every sin, you write, no matter how apparently trivial, harms the body of Christ.
It's so true, Matthew, and I think these are difficult times. I'm actually working right now on a story, you know, that looks in more depth and talks to more people, like, you know, Curtis Martin at Focus and bishops and writers, Catherine Lopez, about how they are handling, weathering this crisis. What are they doing?
Well, Joan, this is very valuable for everyone. I appreciate your piece and you.
It's a difficult time, but as Curtis Martin says, it's also a time for saints, and that's what we're supposed to be.
It is. Well, when we come back, I talk to CNA DC editor Ed Condon for the latest on the ongoing saga of Cardinal Donald Wuerl. This is Register Radio.
Don't miss a moment of 2019. Try 6 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register today for free. Award-winning journalism that goes beyond what you'll find from any secular news service. With the Register, you'll get the real story behind the events that unfold over the course of the year. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. Want to continue your subscription after your free trial? Just pay $49.95 and you'll get a total of 26 issues filled with spiritual insights on world events, along with compelling Catholic news and information. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/NYR or call 800-421-3230 and mention code 919-NYRA. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register Senior Editor and co-host for Register Radio. My co-host, Jeanette DeMello, of course, Editor-in-Chief for the National Catholic Register, is away on maternity leave. This last week, in fact, these last few weeks, have witnessed another series of revelations involving what Cardinal Donald Wuerl, Archbishop Emeritus of Washington, D.C., knew and claimed not to know in the ongoing scandal surrounding former Archbishop, I should say former Cardinal, Theodore McCarrick, All of this while we await a verdict from the Holy See regarding McCarrick's alleged sexual abuse of minors and sexual misconduct and abuse of power with adults. The Catholic News Agency has been leading the way in Catholic media on this story. In particular, D.C. editor Ed Condon and CNA editor-in-chief J.D. Flynn. I'm joined by D.C. editor Ed Condon. Welcome. Welcome
nice
back.
Nice to be here.
I said, almost said, former Archbishop Theodore McCarrick, and that was in some ways probably a kind of a Freudian slip, because if the trial or the process that is underway and has been underway for a while goes in the direction that many of us are speculating it could, he would in fact be former Archbishop. Would that be fair to say?
More than fair to say. I was actually wondering if that was a Freudian slip or just a joke.
It was kind of, but
no,
this isn't a light matter.
This isn't
a very serious business,
very
but
serious.
In point of fact, this is what we're looking at.
No, it absolutely is. And I mean, there is an expectation building that there will be a result. There will be a result soon, and it will be a result that goes against Archbishop McCarrick. For what it's worth, I was talking to someone in Rome who works in the Curia. I hasten to stress, not in the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, but they said that people are now around the curial offices pointedly referring to Mr. McCarrick, that right. There's that level of expectation that will be the outcome, which will be historic, really, as a result, both in the sense that he's a former cardinal, and the laicization of a cardinal is almost unheard of, certainly in the modern era. And also to laicize an archbishop is, you know, a very, very rare event. It doesn't happen very frequently, thankfully. But also someone of his age, this is very unusual in a canonical process to be looking at laicization.
Yeah, we would have to be looking very far back for any sort of a parallel here in terms of someone being laicized who was of that position. I'm assuming.
In terms of a cardinal, yes. I mean, you can think of slightly more recent examples like Archbishop Malingo.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the sort of crimes we're talking about and the unique almost status that Archbishop McCarrick once held, both in the church in the United States and worldwide, I struggle to think of a ready parallel.
Now, it is that inability to find a parallel that really underscores again for those of us in Catholic media, but for Catholics in general. The scale of this scandal since it erupted last June has not ebbed, and the level of interest, I can guarantee that you probably have the same traffic on the CNA sites. I know that on the Register site, anything related to McCarrick, and it's not salacious interest, it is a genuine concern over the scandal.
Absolutely, and I think one of the things that's really marked the enduring force of this story and how it's played out over the last few months is we're not looking at a rehashing of what has happened. It's new information constantly coming to light. This is a story that keeps developing and mutating and really, unfortunately, spreading. You know, in the last few months, we've seen it spread to Europe. We saw a very damning report leaked out of the German Bishops Conference, for example, detailing historical accusations of sexual abuse there. This is something that we're by no means done with, and I think that's a sad reality for Catholic writers and readers alike.
And in the midst of this is Cardinal Donald Wuerl, who submitted his resignation to Pope Francis, 3 years ago. It was finally accepted just last fall. And yet he can't seem to distance himself or to, in some cases, explain himself as to his involvement, not in the scandal itself, but in what he knew.
This is, I think you've put your finger on it. The unfortunate thing for Cardinal Wuerl is no one is actually alleging or has alleged that he has now or ever did anything wrong or improper. The most recent accusations, revelations, whatever you want to call them, that he's been facing and have caused sort of the latest outbreak of turmoil around him is when he first knew, or as he famously put it, heard rumors about Archbishop McCarrick's misconduct, especially with seminarians. What we've learned in the last few weeks is that he did receive exactly such a complaint that follows a very familiar pattern now of Archbishop McCarrick, seminarians, a beach house in New Jersey, sharing beds, things like that. And he received this complaint in 2004 when he was Bishop of Pittsburgh. He acted completely appropriately at the time. Everyone agrees that he took it to the papal nuncio, submitted it there. But it doesn't chime with a lot of the consistent denials he's made in the last 7 months, saying that he was shocked when the accusations against McCarrick first came out, that, you know, this was a complete surprise to him. And now people are saying, well, how could it possibly have been a surprise?
Well, you had one of the best headlines, my favorite headline of 2019, and I use the term favorite very loosely, in the sense of it's memorable because I think it sort of defines the problem that Cardinal Worrell has had, but also the problem that a lot of Catholics are having in dealing with this. And that I'm reading the headline itself: Worrell denies prior denials, denied knowledge of McCarrick seminarian abuse.
I would love to be able to take credit for that headline. That was our editor-in-chief, J.D. Flynn's, but it does sum up the situation. And in a sense, the way in which it's become almost a theater of the absurd. One of the things that I've been thinking about a lot in the last few days was in the USCCB, the U.S. Bishops' Conference meeting in Baltimore in November, Cardinal Worrell only made one intervention from the floor. It was a very short one. For a churchman of his stature, you'd expect him to participate more. The other cardinals certainly did. He gave this one short intervention, which he highlighted the issues of transparency and personal responsibility. And this is really what he's now finding himself having to defend against, is questions about his transparency. Why not just say what you knew when? And I think looking at it from the outside, the sense is growing that Cardinal Worrell really does feel himself to be, in a sense, an aggrieved party here, that he's always done the right thing. He's always been a by-the-book bishop. He was, you know, inventing diocesan review boards to handle accusations of misconduct before they were a thing.
For those who may not remember all the way back into the 80s, I mean, this was a still relatively young bishop at the time.
Very.
Who went to Rome on one very famous case. And who, even as the grand jury report in Pennsylvania noted, he did the right thing time after time after time, but there were just a couple of occasions where it didn't happen. And here's where he finds himself.
Well, I distinguish between what we're talking about now with relation to McCarrick from the other what the grand jury report highlighted as questionable things. I actually have my own reservations about that. I think the record, even by the Pennsylvania grand jury report's full documentation, is very strongly in Cardinal Worrell's favor.
Well, and this is coming out more and more too.
Yes.
But it's been blown completely out of the water by the preoccupation of trying to deal with the McCarrick scandal.
Absolutely. And in a sense, rightly so. I mean, McCarrick is and will continue to be until the day of his laicization, if that's what it comes to, the elephant in the room whenever you're discussing anything to do with the church in the United States. But this problem or question of transparency is a real one, because if you're a bishop like Cardinal Worrell, you have every sense in your own mind of a right to feel aggrieved, because you did the right thing. You were always doing the right thing. You were following the process. So why are people coming for you now? And I think this is something, and really to quote Cardinal Worrell himself in November, that the next phase of this is going to be about accountability and transparency. And he said personal responsibility and institutional transparency. And I think that's what he and others in the church are now finding the faithful are deadly serious about.
Then how did we end up with the level of apparent confusion in rolling out what he knew or didn't know? I mean, just in this last week, we had a letter, I think, on the 12th of January. We had another letter on the 15th of January, this coming on the heels of what was already a very confused response.
Mm. Yeah, the two letters themselves do not sit comfortably next to one another. In his letter to all his priests of the Archdiocese on the 12th, he said that he had previously not spoken about hearing rumors or accusations about McCarrick and seminarians, and that when he made such denials in the past, he was speaking purely in the context of the allegations of abuse of minors by McCarrick. Now,
which is an important distinction.
It is an absolutely important distinction to make. However, if you go back and look at all of the Cardinal's media appearances over the summer, on some occasions, I would say it's unclear, to say the least, that he is speaking narrowly to the issue of abuse of minors. He also said that he couldn't possibly have referenced this case that was brought to him in 2004 because he was bound by confidentiality, that he had to respect the confidentiality of the accuser. And that's also a perfectly legitimate thing to say. In this case, the accuser, the original accuser of Archbishop McCarrick in 2004, has come out and said that he didn't consider Cardinal Worrell to be bound to not mention the case or anything, but he just wanted his own identity shielded. And that's fine. But again, a sort of knee-jerk reflexive reaction to protect the confidentiality of victims of sexual abuse is not a bad instinct. But as things come out more and more, there's more and more pressure on him to come forward. The real problem was his second letter, which was dated January 15th, in which he said that he had actually a lapse of memory, that he'd completely forgotten about this event in the intervening years, that it had been 14 years and it had fallen out of his mind, because why would he continue to remember this shocking accusation against McCarrick? Because he never heard anything else about it. So what was there to keep it in his mind? And that's, again, in itself, perhaps defensible, perhaps understandable. But if you put the two next to each other, you can't say, I didn't mention it because I was respecting confidentiality and I forgot it at the same time. It's almost as if in the 3 days between the January 12th and January 15th letter, the Cardinal remembered that he'd forgotten. And that's a hard ask for people to get their heads around.
Well, the headline of one of your pieces, in fact, on this very question is unfathomable that Worrell forgot allegations, and you're quoting the accuser involved in this case. So to sort of pivot in the brief time that we have left, a bit of good news, I think, and that is the effort on the part of Archbishop Lori of Baltimore to institute some sort of a reporting mechanism for his archdiocese that also involves lay people.
That's right. He's set up an independent reporting mechanism for all accusations of abuse in the Archdiocese of Baltimore. It's very similar to, perhaps I haven't read the fine detail, indistinguishable from the same sort of reporting mechanism that was debated by the bishops in Baltimore last year.
Significantly, they were not actually allowed to vote at the request of the Holy See.
That's correct.
Right.
I have not studied Archbishop Lori's new proposal in detail. However, even without studying it, I'm happy to say I think this is great news. And it's great news because it's finally an archbishop doing the one thing that I've been hoping we'll see ever since this whole mess started, which is being bold in their own backyard, right, saying, I'm the bishop here. I don't have to wait for a conference. I don't have to wait for a summit in Rome. I don't have to wait for the U.S. Bishops' Conference or a Vatican department or the Pope himself to tell me to get a move on. I can do this, and I think that's great initiative.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Ed Condon of the Catholic News Agency, thanks for your great work.
Always great to be here.
Well, that's it for this week on Register Radio. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Be sure also to listen to our podcasts. Thanks so much for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Jeanette DeMello, our producer Jeff Burson, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Take care, and God bless.